in a world of mindless movie cliches. One podcast fights back. Critics are calling it profound, epic, free. Prepare to revisit your video cassette memories of the 1980s and 90s. Behold, it's VHS Rewind.
I've had a lot of strange experiences after all these years in the film business, but I have to say the Fantastic Four rank somewhere near the top.
It's clobbering time.
Like a phantom, this film.
Strange.
It was like a feeling that I've never experienced before. It's a piece of history.
I never would have thought then, what is it, 20 years later, that I'd be sitting here talking about it.
This thing just won't die.
Expect trouble.
I didn't know then, you know, all of the machinery that had been worked.
It was the seedy, dark side of Hollywood.
We really wanted people to see this.
How many movies did Roger Corman make and never release? One.
Wait a minute. Why? We're gonna let them take this movie away from us and not get anything out of it? We gotta show people that we made a movie. That's how you get another job.
All this effort and time and all the work that went into making that film, and that pointless, meaningless.
This film was never really intended to be a film. And I said, oh yeah? You watch.
I think this documentary is it's about time.
Hopefully, we might be like the last piece of this whole puzzle.
The great, untold, never seen version, the original Fantastic Four.
Finally, after 20 years, this story is going to be told.
Unfortunately, this version of the Fantastic Four really was doomed.
Hello, my name is Mark. And I am lucky this afternoon to be interviewing you're the director and producer and writer, right?
Yeah, I would say I'm a producer, I'm the director, and the editor. My Mark Sykes is the executive producer. I've been fascinated by this thing forever, you know, about the movie. And
if I could just introduce you officially, you're Marty Langford, and your film is Doomed, the untold story of Roger Corman's The Fantastic Four, which is one of those cult, very difficult movies to find until more recently when the digital world puts it in your lap. As you're telling me, it's on YouTube.
It is, yes, in its entirety. You can, find it, click on a link and sit down for 90 some odd minutes and watch the whole thing.
And I saw it originally on a bootleg. I think I got it at Kim's Video from downtown in New York. And it was kind of a big deal that they even rented it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was, not to knock Kim's, but it was illegal copy.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
And, the movie never got a release. So anytime anybody's ever seen it, anytime anybody's downloaded or rented it, it has been, by the letter of the law, kind of an illegal act.
Right.
But that doesn't, that doesn't stop it, of course, from proliferating in and around pretty much everywhere.
Well, in the early 90s or mid-90s, when I finally did see it, Kim's was full of those type of movies.
Yes.
Like El Topo is there and, movies that you just couldn't get in this country. And, it was like right in that section. So, I did see it. I tried watching it more recently and the copy I have, just freezes for whatever reason, but, moving forward, I'm going to watch it on YouTube.
Yes, do so.
But I just wanted to know if you could, so your website also, just, I just wanted to point it out. It's doomedthemovie.com.
Correct.
And, you're currently in festivals right now with the film.
Yes, we're in the festival kind of submission process.
Mm-hmm.
We're out to a number of venues, cons and fests, and we're just in the process of, wading through the different submission replies and figuring out our strategy for release, this late.
Right. And there is a lot of buzz around your film. I mean, especially when you released the trailer originally. It was like this firestorm of like blah, 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 you know, it's coming out, this is going to be great. And it got quiet because I think you wanted to finalize it, and you also wanted to, I think we live in kind of a society where it's like, oh, you're going to put a trailer out there? Okay, well, is it out yet? You know, it's like they expect it the next day.
Yes, yeah, we had some tremendous buzz when we first released the trailer, which was surprisingly, and I look back at it and it seems impossible, but it was just about a year ago, mid-January of 2014. And it exploded. We had some really good press. Lots of people seemed to pick it up in terms of the news organization out there that kind of we geeks go to. And we were lucky enough to kind of transition into the mainstream. We had a couple of, I think the most influential kind of story we had out there is that we were on the cover. We were on the front page of Yahoo News for a couple of hours.
Which is tremendous.
Yahoo Movies had called and we had done a proper interview. And that generated, a lot of buzz and a lot of interest.
I'm sorry. Go on.
I was just going to say, at one point, you know, as we were tracking it, I remember these days vividly. We were at its height. We released on a Monday, and I think by like the Tuesday afternoon, early Wednesday, we were getting between like 8,000 and 10,000 hits an hour, and it was remarkable. Each time we'd refresh, you know, another 600, you know, in the course of, 20 seconds, and it was very exciting.
Well, I have no doubt that when you do release the movie, I think you'll get lightning striking twice. I know I, for one, am lining up to see it. I'm kind of going to compare it a little bit to at least the concept of Stephen Scarlatta's Jodorowsky's Dune, which
a great, I actually contacted him just to kind of talk shop at one point, because Jodorowsky's Dune has followed, it has a release pattern distribution strategy that it's something that we can learn from. It was a fairly niche subject in terms of the content, but it was remarkably well handled in terms of how it was released and distributed, and even made the Oscar shortlist for documentaries for this past year, which is just tremendous. I mean, I saw the movie in a theater in Western Massachusetts, which is amazing, you know, when you consider how niche a film like that really is.
Sure. I mean, whenever I would mention Jodorowsky to anyone who's there, it's not exactly the kind of name that people know, and they still don't, but I think a lot more do now.
It struck a chord with this kind of, and you're right, I think, to associate our movie with that, in that it's an interesting story that's fairly universal when you have an artist or set of artists who are trying to create something, and they have these obstacles put before them, many of which were put there in terms of or by, you know, the financial entities or the administration who are either actively trying to stop a release or just have a level of disinterest that results in apathy. You know, they really don't see the advantage to funding, you know, Jodorowsky's Dune, which was an amazing project, which of course was never released. In our case, with Fantastic Four, there was a lot more going on behind the scenes that restricted and ultimately, you know, put the kibosh on the whole release.
Right. So I have to ask, when did you first see the Fantastic Four movie?
Yeah, I thought, I would say, like most people, I was introduced to it through the Film Threat issue that came out in kind of mid-'93, the Chris Ford magazine. Yeah, it was just tremendous. And in a bit of kind of serendipity, a really, really interesting thing happened in that my good friend, who became the executive producer of this film, Doomed, Mark Sykes, actually worked for Roger Corman at Concord New Horizons during that period. Mark was actually the casting assistant
that's
Fantastic Four. So we were able to, when we put this project together, Mark was able to reconnect with, I would say, everybody that we wanted to talk to. He was able to line up very easily. He still had casting notes. He still had sign-in sheets for the auditions. So
I can't believe the amount of people. I mean, you got so many people in your documentary. It's phenomenal.
We did, yeah. I mean, pretty much everybody that we aimed to get, I would say, with a couple of exceptions. And these exceptions, I think, are interesting in their absence. You know, we did not get Stan Lee, for instance. We connected and spoke with Stan, interested in discussing. Mm-hmm. And as we kind of go through, he and people, it becomes pretty clear why they kind of didn't want to talk to us.
Right. And is, I mean, outside of that, like, I mean, I could see why Stan Lee might not want to comment or his people might not want him to comment. But was there anyone who, I guess, just flat out said, no, I'm not going to talk about it? It was, you know, maybe it left a bad taste in their mouth. So a lot of people put a lot of work into this. And for it to not come to fruition, obviously, would leave a lot of bitterness.
Yeah, and the answer is no. And in fact, there was a very strong response from, I would say, each, from each and every person we contacted, we were able to land, from the, you know, casting assistant Mark to the vice president of marketing, you know, who put together the poster design and the release strategy. We spoke to Roger, of course, who we had to speak to.
Which is magical. That's just, when I saw him up there, I'm like, this is the best documentary about this. This is great.
Yeah, highlight of my life. I mean, you have absolutely no idea. He said he was going to give us 15 minutes and we probably, I don't know, spent ultimately about an hour with him, in his office. And it was magical. It was tremendous. And he gave us some really, really interesting stuff that's really never been heard before.
Oh, I can't wait to hear it. Well, actually, speaking of Corman, I mean, this might be a hard thing to sum up, but does he have like an overall opinion of the Fantastic Four in the sense of as just a one piece? Like if he could say, well, it's a good movie or it's a bad movie. I mean, his movies are very, very... controversial in the sense of, you know, opinions.
Sure. Yes, we spoke about it on and off camera, and he prefaced each of the ultimately compliments that he gave the movie by saying something like, for the money. You know, it was a wonderful movie for the money.
Right.
It was a great cast, you know, that we could afford. So he did kind of put caveats on his opinion of the movie that were usually based on the fact that over $1 million to make a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can't believe they actually did get it done for $1 million. You think $1 million is a lot of money until you actually start even watching the movie. I'm looking, you know, there are sets in the movie that look pretty good. You know, I can imagine, you know, $40,000 being spent on one particular thing would be a tremendous part of your budget.
Right, and the brilliance of Corman is that he owns everything and he keeps everything. So the sets and that he was using for the Fantastic Four in his soundstage were sets, and we do this in the movie, we do some really kind of fun editing where we show other Corman films using the same sets of Fantastic Four, and they're just painted differently, or they have different sets of blinking lights, a two-cheater term, or they light it differently, but so, he uses these sets over and over and over again.
Are you willing to go on the record that there's going to be a Corman Fantastic Four Part 2? No.
Oh, gosh, yeah. No, I can guarantee you that'll never happen.
not in the public's eye, anyway.
No.
After you did see it, you know, you learned about it basically from the magazine.
Yeah.
What was your first impression of it?
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, I ultimately, I got it like everybody else did by going to, in my case, it was a Fangoria Weekend of Horrors convention in New York, you know, which I used to go to every year, you know, for a couple of decades. And it was that experience of walking down the aisles, which I'm sure you've had, and looking through the bins of VHS tapes with these horrible, you know, handmade inserts and seeing, you know, the Fantastic Four, the unreleased Roger Corman version. For, you know, goodness, I don't know, $15 or $20.
Yeah, it's like being at a garage sale and finding like that record, and it's like, hope nobody sees this.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Take my money, just.
And it became a mainstay. You know, it became something that you continue to this day. You know, I still go to the chiller shows and stuff, and you still see Fantastic Four, you know, DVDs now, you know, lined up in bins alphabetically, and they're still out there and people are still profiting off it. The shame of it is, of course, that the people who should have been profiting off it have, you know, and those were the people involved in the production. They made their money. They got their salaries when they were making it. But there were no kind of future earnings with that, as you often see with, you know, with the film industry.
Yeah. So, all right, so you see the movie, you know, and it kind of, you know, you like it, it strikes a chord with you, obviously.
Yeah.
And your friend Mark,
yes.
I mean, do you bring up the movie to him and he just happens to say, you know, oh, well, I was actually involved in on that on some level, and you think, you know, maybe this might be a good topic for a documentary. I mean, is that how it sparks?
I would say that it's kind of like that, with the exception of, you know, a 20-year period being in between.
Oh, sure,
you worked
sure.
on this to, oh, this would be an interesting topic. I actually spent a summer out in L.A. back in 93, and I went to the Shrine Auditorium where they had premiered the trailer at their the comic book show in Los Angeles. So I was able to meet the cast, and through, of course, Mark facilitated this. I was able to meet the cast and the director, and they premiered the trailer, and it was this huge, you know, thing in the comic book crowds. So I was aware of Mark's involvement, and I was aware of the time it was taking for this movie to ultimately come out. And, you know, I was seeing the trailer, you know, on the Carnosaur, you know, two VHS tapes that were out there in video stores. So
right.
we all knew it was coming. We all hoped it was coming. We all expected it was coming, but, you know, months and months and months go by, and that's what we investigate in this documentary is what the hell happened.
Yeah, I mean, so did they just not release this movie one day? Like, they just said, well, all right, it's in production. As you see, a lot of movies are in production.
Yep.
And it just kind of never gets out of the post-production
platform, I guess? And it's interesting, and this is, you know, this is what we investigated, and the questions that I had were kind of, or the question was like, who knew what when, you know, who was aware that this film was only fulfilling an option, you know, from a German company who had had the rights to the movie to retain the rights for, you know, future films, which indeed they did. Constantine Films continues to this day to be a producing partner on all the Fantastic Four properties with Sony. So Corman's little million-dollar, you know, loophole movie exists. And because of its existence, we're now seeing, you know, each of the Fantastic Four movies that have been released and the new one coming out next year. They wouldn't have been, you know, Constantine Films wouldn't have been involved had it not been for this movie. Corman, Roger said at one point that, you know, this movie provided hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars for Constantine, because without it, they would have lost the rights and it would have gone away.
So it was really just a budgeted aspect of those movies, but it seems like a tremendous amount of work it could have been easier, I guess. Couldn't they have made a cartoon?
Right. Yeah. And there was, you know, I mean, it's interesting. We all kind of know more or less the reasons why it was made and the reasons they went into production so quickly in order to, you know, retain that that option on it. But the question is, if they just needed to start filming the movie by the end of the year 1992 in order to retain the option, why finish it? Why go through a year of post-production? Why print thousands of one sheets and posters? Why cut a trailer? Why
go out to comic book conventions? Corman? You know, why involve somebody like him who, you know, he had a name then, you know, it's not like he was a nobody.
Right. And Roger doesn't spend money if he doesn't have to spend money. So why was he continuing to kind of advertise the fact that it's coming out if it was indeed not going to come out? So that speaks to the fact of whether or not Roger knew and when Roger knew that the movie was going to be shelved. I will say that, you know, Roger didn't make the decision not to release this movie.
Right. You know, one thing I wanted to say is the guy I do the podcast with, Chris Hassler, he wanted me to just mention to you that his opinion is that Corman's version still blows away the Jessica Alba version, in his
yeah,
opinion.
Yeah, I mean, good. It's funny how you can drop over.
I'm sorry, say that again?
I know, it's just funny how you refer to it as the Jessica Alba version.
That's all I remember.
You know, I know. You know, yeah, we speak to everybody involved in the original production, and they're like, you know, our thing was better. Our movie had the charm and the intent that the original comic put forth. Our movie spoke to the family aspect of this group of people. It had a story in terms of characters, other than letting fault of these last.
Right.
Who the hell knows what's going to happen in this next movie coming out? It's the timing couldn't be better for us. You know, we were in 2015, which is the year that this Josh Trank new one is coming out, which is going to, you know, really kind of, I hope, end in this property.
So, you know, as you do shop your documentary around and all of this stuff, you know, that is really a good point. I believe it's coming out in August, the new Fantastic Four.
I think so, yeah. I think they're looking at the Guardians of the Galaxy kind of release pattern of last year.
So, you know, there's, I'm sure there's buzz about that, which means that you probably get a few extra, you know, Google points on,
right.
With that.
I think so, too. That, you know, we're well known enough around the entertainment world that we hope to get more than a few mentions with the articles and the blogs and the stories there when this new movie's coming out, just to kind of contextualize the release history of the Fantastic Four.
So, are you speaking to distributors yet, or do you have a distributor, and or do you have like an estimated time of like when you want to see like your maybe a release in theaters, or maybe I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know how that works.
Yeah, we've been contacted by, you know, a lot of people
awesome.
as the trailer views were moving up and up on YouTube. We started to get, you know, lots of people contacting.
Yeah,
us
you have over 300,000 views, I believe.
Yeah,
like 350. 50. It's amazing.
It really is. We couldn't be happier. We haven't chosen a distributor. We are, as we enter the festival season, our festival season, we expect, you know, to be in contact with many more. So it's a good position to be in, where we'll have the opportunity to choose whom will go with, rather than kind of beating down doors and waiting for people to, doing it on our own. We have a good profile, and we have a confidence, you know, we'll hit the right house, we'll hit the right distribution entity, and we'll have a successful run that will hopefully, yeah, have limited theatrical, and then going into the on-demand and physical media.
Yeah, I think you're in a great position, especially for this, you have a lot going for you. You know, the whole superhero thing, the you have conspiracies, you have everything going. You know, it's a really amazing story. I mean, I only know such a small amount of the story.
Yeah.
So
the hardcore geeks there who are familiar with the version a heck of a lot more than kind of what's been public information. You know, we have interviews and reveals and revelations about elements of this movie that had either been, never known before, or even go against what has been understood to be the reasons why. So we tell the whole story. You know, this is definitive. This is forward.
Well, do you, having to do with the original Fantastic Four from 1994, do you see that film ever kind of having a real release at this point?
Yeah.
You do?
I had two goals when I started this. I wanted a good copy of the movie. You know, a DVD a year of this when I go to different shows, hoping it'll be a generation nicer and a generation higher than the one I bought last year in terms of, you know, being duplicated. And I will say that in our documentary, we have, we show the movie in its various states, and that you'll see quality-wise the original Fantastic Four like you've never seen it before. We have access to elements that nobody else had access to, which is terrific. So my one goal was to get a freaking good copy of the movie, which I do. Second was that, there are reasons why it never has been released. But those reasons, as time goes by, and as people become more aware of these properties, you know, that it's not going to compete or sully or dirty the water to have another Fantastic Four out there. We've got, you know, two Scarlet Witches and two Quicksilvers, and we have comic book characters on television, you know, and people aren't going to be confused about, you know, the TV Flash versus the Justice League Warner Brothers.
And there's no doubt there's money to be made with
that
print. And Actually, that was my next question. Do you know if the original prints exist? I mean, they do.
Yeah, I'm not saying they do. I'm saying they investigate as to whether or not they do in the documentary. There's been, theories, and there's been speculation and conspiracies about what exactly, where exactly the negative is. Where does it sit? Who owns it? What's stopping them from releasing it? Is it just they don't want to confuse the viewer into thinking, whoa, am I accidentally going to rent the Corman Fantastic Four? I'm trying to get the Alba, Fantastic Four. Right, yeah. Is Fox worried about it? We tell you, we investigate and come up with answers that are definitive in terms of where this film is, who owns it, why it hasn't been released yet, and whether or not it could one day, hopefully soon, be released.
Now, I recall there being some decent behind-the-scenes footage.
Yes. Yep.
And where did that come from? I mean, where do you acquire something like that?
A couple of different sources. I mean, the actors and the people on the crew had elements that they used. They maintained or held on to props. Mm-hmm. We have ridiculous. I mean, we have like Jay Underwood with Johnny Storm. We have his W-2 forms from that year. God. We have check stubs from Concord New Horizons for the paychecks that these guys earned. We have script copies. We have storyboards, original sets of storyboards. And we have elements that people just hold on to, that put in a folder, and filed away. And then we contacted them 20 years later. They were like, yeah, I think I can dig that up. And amongst the things that were dug up were the behind-the-scenes video footage that, some of these guys shot with camcorders,
Right.
They were doing it with their phones, of course. But so, yeah, we were given access to stuff that, you've never, ever, ever seen before.
Right. And some of the people, I think his name is Joseph Culp.
Sure.
I don't know. He has a certain, a very intense attitude about things. And it seems as though, I don't know, a lot of the people in it, and him included, might be a big part of the whole generation of, I guess, collecting things. And they all kind of fell into what I consider people hold on to stuff. Like they collect, they're also out in, I'm going to assume that most of them are out on the West Coast, but I could be totally wrong.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
But, you're surrounded by Hollywood. You love Hollywood. You were in this, big film. A lot of the people went on to do other things.
Joseph, in particular, not exclusively, did hold on to stuff. And he did have a vested interest in seeing this movie flourish and get out there. So he still has stuff that from the production. And one of the main reasons was that Joseph had a young kid, Jackson Culp, who's a terrific kid, who grew up with Joseph being Dr. Doom.
Wow.
So and he got into collecting, and Joseph kind of encouraged that by having him on set, giving him props. So Jackson goes out cosplaying sometimes with some of the actual things that were used in the production of the movie. Hollywood like called a legacy. Joseph's dad was Robert Culp, who was on The Greatest American Hero, who was a Hollywood a character actor for decades.
I didn't know that. I did not know that, and I'm a big fan of him and The Greatest American Hero.
And Alex, who played Reed Richards, Alex Hyde White, he was a legacy. His father was Alfred Hyde White, who was on Buck Rogers in the 25th Century.
Oh, wow.
He played like the old doubting guy,
So this is like a next generation type of situation, too. It's
For those two guys, it was, and they speak at length about how that kind of helped form a bond and a friendship between them. Because they both had these fathers who were active in the industry and who helped color the relationship between not only, them in reality, but also with the characters in the movie, Reed and Victor, kind of worked off each other.
Now I want to see it even more.
Look at that, huh? I know, yeah, there's great stuff.
Now, I wonder, growing up as like a Dr. Doom, you know, you wonder like, all right, your dad played the Dr. Doom. Is it cooler to be the Dr. Doom that, you know, might be in the Jessica Alba version or right. the underground, the one that, you know, people only rumored to see, you know, the print of?
Yeah, so, right. And I guess my take would be, and this is Jackson's as well. Jackson was there when we interviewed Joseph. Is that was the first, you know?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
You can say, well, I was, you know, the biggest, or I was the highest paid, or I had the best suit, but only one of them can say they were the first, and right. And that's where Joseph, you know, gets credit.
And right now, what is the reception of the movie while you show it at festivals?
Right. Well, I mean, so few people have seen it, which is, you know, Mark and I are keeping kind of our cards very close to our chest.
Good.
There are things that kind of we don't want to reveal. There are, you know, not maybe not. I wouldn't categorize them as like secrets, but there are elements to it that are that we reveal throughout the film that that tell the story. So we've been very careful, kind of not to kind of really put it out there yet. So we've put out clips, and you know, you can visit our YouTube page and watch the trailer and watch. We've actually posted the first 3.5 minutes of the movie are up on YouTube as well. You can go watch. So amongst my filmmaker friends, you know, who I've maybe asked for feedback, it's been tremendous. You know, people will comment on a thing here or there. But overall, the reception's been great, you know, and the support we've been getting from the festivals we've been sending to seem strong, but until, you know, the acceptance letters comes in, mm-hmm. you know, I don't exactly want to review what they're saying either.
Gotcha. And I noticed on your webpage you have a support page where I really like the idea of it. You print out a PDF of I Support Doomed, and you take like a selfie-type photo with it.
Yeah.
And also... You know, there's a lot to be said for, like, donations when it comes to this type of thing. And
yeah, I mean, we had a... It's funny. We had a very, I guess I can say, kind of unsuccessful crowdsourcing campaign where, you know, we were looking for X amount of dollars to produce it, and we got a fraction of what we asked for. We got just enough for me to get out to L.A. For a few weeks to get through principal photography, to pay, you know, the crew that we had out there. I edited it myself. You know, so we don't have a lot of support, you know, in terms of a stream of money coming in that's letting us do this. We're doing it all on our own. It's really a two-man show, Mark and myself.
Now, it seems like it's really following the same type of, you know, original Roger Corman method, I guess. You know,
sure.
you're on a shoestring budget. You're probably putting a lot of your own money into it.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly been that. So right now, you know, we have a lot of stuff for sale, for instance, on the website. We have original one-sheet posters. We have original one-sheet posters that are signed by the cast and by the director that you can buy, and that, you know, I encourage people to go there and purchase it. We have pre-orders for the DVD, for the Blu-ray, where you can pay in advance, help us get through post-production, although we're pretty much through it now. But help us, you know, festival entries are, you know, they're $100 a pop. Each festival we send out to costs money. So, you know, I don't want to say we need all the help we can get, but if you do want to support us, then yeah, please visit doomedthemovie.com.
You know, I'm looking here, and you're asking only $25 for the Blu-ray and DVD combo. And I think that's just like a really extremely fair price.
No,
I'm going to be actually clicking this afterward.
Yeah, hell, I think so too. You know, we realize that it's been a while since we've announced and since we've started pre-orders, and we've had a very, very patient fan base. We'll get, you know, emails every so often saying, "Hey, where the hell's my movie?" And our answer is, have patience, you know. We haven't had one person, you know, demand a refund. People have been very supportive, but we do want to get word out there that it's coming, and that if you've pre-ordered anything, you're going to get it. We just want to make sure that we have the best distribution in place and the best opportunity to get this in front of an audience. You know, that's all we want to do. We want people to see it.
Right. Well, I'm really excited to see it. I have to be honest with you.
Thank you.
More so than when we first started talking. I'm a big fan of different documentaries, and this, from what the few minutes I've seen of it, everything about it really does remind me of Jodorowsky's Dune in the sense of production level. You know,
yeah.
There's a lot of quality here. So, you know, just for that alone, it seems like it's very well filmed, organized, and edited. So,
yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. I'm just looking forward to it. I don't know. Is there any? Oh, you know, there is one thing I wanted to ask you.
Sure.
A lot of people say this movie, they refer to it as an ashcan film. Kind of, it's a movie that is just made to never be released, which is what we kind of went over.
Yep.
Do you know of any other movies that are like that? What else is out there that,
Yeah, there are movies that have never been released. It's not as though we're saying, you know, we're the only film that was produced and never found distribution.
But this one has a big director. This one has a big topic. This one has a big following already.
Yeah, it does. There's a quote in the movie where one of our participants says, you know, how many movies has Roger Corman made and never released? And the answer is one.
Right.
And Corman is, you know, a prolific filmmaker and producer and acquirer of films. So there are really, really good reasons why this movie never got released. We tell you what they are in the documentary. But it does have a fairly unique place in the reasons why it's never been released. You know, Jerry Lewis doesn't want anybody to see The Day the Clown Cries. You know,
right.
His clown Nazi movie. So he owns it, and he has chosen never to release it. Fantastic Four is in a similar boat in that it's hasn't been seen yet, but the reasons why I think are pretty unique, and I feel pretty safe in saying that it's the only movie to never have been released for the reasons that it hasn't been.
Right. All right. And ironically enough, The Day the Clown Cried, we are on my podcast, we're going to do a review of the script in about probably
yes.
two episodes. So
yeah, that's out
tune
there.
In.
Great, isn't it? Yeah, I've got one of those too.
Yeah, I've read it, and I don't know. I'm a big fan of Jerry Lewis. I don't know. I feel like I'm half Canadian, but I'm not. But nonetheless, Marty, I wanted to thank you so much for taking the time to come onto the show.
Sure.
Putting up with my goofy questions, and everyone, you should just go to doomedthemovie.com and see Marty Langford's schedule to get a copy of Doomed, the untold story of Roger Corman's The Fantastic Four, which I am super
yeah.
excited for.
Thank you. Yeah, and in the meantime, please go search for us on Facebook. We're under, you know, Doomed, the untold story. Like us on Facebook, and we're offering kind of a cool giveaway right now. So if you do go out and like us on Facebook, send us an email, and you can expect a very cool little gift delivered to you, one of which I'll send to you as soon as we get off the phone.
Oh, awesome, man.
Yeah.
And I'll put all the links in the show notes and on our website, VHSRewind.com.
Right.
All right, Marty, I'll talk to you. Hopefully we can follow up on this even.
Absolutely,
if you can make
Mark,
the time for us
it.
Small guys when you're up there collecting the big checks.
I will do it.
All right, I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Mark.